This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. Fewer than 30% of nursing homes across the country are capable of scoring an above-average inspection rating. And understaffing is the largest traceable culprit when it comes to declining inspection ratings. These are among the findings of the newly released state-by-state nursing home report card from the nonprofit nursing home resident advocacy nonprofit Families for Better Care. Florida dropped from 6th place to 13th place from last year's report. Later this hour, WGCU's John Davis sits down with the organization executive director for a closer look at the report card's findings and recommendations. But first, on June 19, 1865, Union Army Major General Gordon Granger issued an order that began, quote, "The people of Texas are informed that, in accordance with the proclamation from the executive of the United States, all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of personal rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves, and the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that between employer and hired labor." End quote. This proclamation came 2 months after the formal end of the Civil War and 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. And while General Granger did not know it at the time, this proclamation and the date it was declared would go on to become the most popular annual celebration of emancipation from slavery in the United States. On today's show, we're going to explore this often overlooked piece of history. I'm joined in studio by Jarrett Eady. He's Director of Diversity and Inclusion at the Lee County School District and a board member of the Lee County Black History Society, which will be marking Juneteenth this Saturday in Fort Myers. Jarrett, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, sir.
And we're also joined in studio by Dr. Jeffrey Fortney. He's an assistant professor of history at Florida Gulf Coast University. Dr. Fortney, thanks for being here, too.
Thank you.
And as always, we do invite you to join our conversation. Did you learn about Juneteenth in school? Do you celebrate it today? We'd like to hear from you. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So I want to start from the beginning of where it's taught and why I wasn't familiar with it. You said before the show, Dr. Fortney, that you grew up in Texas and still were not necessarily taught this. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And Texans are very particular about their history, very passionate about their history. I can remember seventh grade Texas history very closely. I learned to memorize Travis's letter from the Alamo. I learned about Texans in World War II. But this was just something that was skipped over to the point that I finished a degree in history from a Texas university. Never learned about Juneteenth. It took me working in the corporate world for somebody to request the holiday off for me to have to kind of smile and fake what I knew what was going on as I quickly Googled and then granted it. So this was something that growing up in Texas, I didn't learn at all.
Jarrett, you know, we established before the show that we both went to Fort Myers High. You're
yes,
about
sir.
10 years behind me. Did I just not pay attention in history class, or was I not taught this?
More than likely, you were not taught this. And I think the importance of the holiday is to understand the roots of the African-American oral tradition. It's a commonplace in our community. There are certain things that we have that are near and dear to us, that are family-like atmosphere. And now we're getting to the point in our contemporary society to ensure that some of those things that are close family reunion kind of celebrations make it into the lexicon of American celebrations, even down to those of us who have some of those great Apple devices. If you notice on your calendar, Juneteenth is now designated as a holiday, a part of Apple, even with shows like Blackish on ABC, are giving entire episodes to the concept of Juneteenth. So we're taking something that exists through oral tradition, and at one point, the regional celebrations from Texas and making sure it moves out throughout the diaspora, but making sure it's a part of American celebration because the heart and soul of the African-American experience should and is a part of the American story.
So if you may not have learned it at Fort Myers High, but were you familiar with it because of your family and the way you celebrated it every year? We just weren't aware of that?
You know, actually looking at a family who has been within the Southwest Florida community since the 1920s, my knowledge of Juneteenth came through a study of being a student at Fort Myers High School. We were a part of a community African-American history and cultural brain bowl team. Hmm. And during my senior year, we actually won the state championship. So through part of that study and diligent research, we had the exposure to it. But it was not something, being a young man who grew up and was reared here in the Southwest Florida community, that we did not celebrate to that level back in the early 1990s and early part of the 2000s. So that is the quest of the Lee County Black History Society to ensure that Southwest Florida is on the Juneteenth map, that we have an official designation for that celebration. But in all honesty, it was not something that my family, prior to having that exposure, practiced. So not just making sure that our non-African-American communities of color are aware of it, but also our African-American communities are aware of the holiday. Huh. And we have the same level of connection to it as we do the 4th of July.
So this Saturday's celebration at Roberto Clemente Park, is this – how long has this been going on now?
So this has been going on for 7 years.
Okay.
I'm currently a board member, but prior to this, I was the chairman of the board of directors. And so through my tenure since 2010, we've had varying levels of commitment and connections to it. Prior to this year, it was a partnership with the City of Fort Myers Housing Authority, and we celebrated Juneteenth and Father's Day on the same weekend. But the celebration in its current form has been 7 years. It's a great opportunity to bring the family out. And the commemoration, education, and also celebration theme that's been adopted by the board of directors is to ensure, much like you and I, Mike, that little kids around the Southwest Florida community have some level of knowledge and exposure to the holiday, and making sure that our community is aware we're celebrating, we're educating, and we're commemorating the freedom that was granted, and making sure that we understand the impact of the Emancipation Proclamation, but also understanding things like Reconstruction, as the doctor will agree with, that was a different level of slavery. So there was emancipation, but what happened after that? And that's the story we're trying to tell.
Well, we are happy and proud to be able to try to spread the word here today with you guys. I appreciate that. Well, let's jump back to the beginning and then work our way back to where we just were. Did the people in Texas really not know about the Emancipation Proclamation? Were they just, we don't want to look over there? Or
it's kind of a complicated question. A lot of times you hear this, that they just did not know about the Emancipation Proclamation. And Texas during the war, like Texas and most things, was a little bit unique.
They were
isolated in a certain way. Texans fought the war, but the war didn't really come to Texas except for a few different major skirmishes. But more than that, within Texas, during the war, those who plantation owners who knew that every step of the Union Army comes emancipation, if they could, they took as many slaves as they could and they sent them to Texas. They went to Texas.
Okay.
So you have large communities that are refugeed, as it was called in Texas. These communities obviously would have known they're not moving just because. They're moving because of the potential of emancipation. But I think the bigger takeaway from the question is about whether they knew or not is whether it would necessarily matter.
Right.
They knew that January 1st, 1863, it went into effect. That only meant if the Union won. It only also meant if there was going to be a force behind it, which is what makes Juneteenth so important, because that's when you have Union soldiers show up. That's when you have the force of this emancipation will in fact happen. Because before that, it was really up for debate. Slavery is still very active even into June of 1865. We have people who are buying and selling humans for large amounts of specie and expecting that this is going to continue despite the fact that the Confederacy has imploded.
Hmm. Do we know how people in Texas, the slave owners, responded to this? It seems like they must have probably being Texans in general and sorry, Dr. Forney.
I'll live.
It seems like this probably would have not been well received. Is that fair to say?
That is very fair to say. The level of would you have some of the plantation owners being able to shore up their property, if you will, and not to the level of insurrection, armed rebellion, but it was not well received. And if you look, it's a very great point to have the distinction. The quizzical part of American history is looking at the impact of the true impact of the Emancipation Proclamation and the states that were considered in rebellion. What did the words actually do? Was it more of a symbolic gesture or have any force behind it? And I think that's the interesting part of knowing by 1865, the war is finding in its final stages. So the knowledge of the emancipation and the knowledge of the surrender of Lee has a double impact. And I think that's why the Juneteenth holiday has great significance, not just tracing its genesis back to 2.5 years later after the emancipation, but knowing juxtaposition-wise where the word was received, knowing that Lee is surrendering in Appomattox. So those are great distinctions to have, but knowing that the slave owners were not going to go quietly into the dark with this news that they were now a part the transition back into the Union, as much we see black codes and other things that start to be implemented.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I would add, we have several accounts of those who tried to celebrate right away being met with force. We have the former slave patrols. There's one account where they find 100 now freedmen and they arrest all 100 of them, put them in jail and plan to return them to masters and instead end up selling them to Union forces for use of labor. Mm. So we do. There are other instances where people say, well, they read us the proclamation and they said, OK, well, now we'll come to terms and we'll be paid wages. But obviously we know what happens afterwards. Mm-hmm. We know the aftermath and the problems that come with that.
Summarize those, and I know that's a big question, but you know, how badly did it go?
Well, I think the interesting part about the general's proclamation,
it has like some specific
relationship between employer and employee.
That's what I was getting at. Yeah.
So, not just looking at Texas, but looking at the former states that were in rebellion, slavery by another name is sharecropping. So the system of sharecropping, was it really an equitable system of being able to be compensated for the amount of work that was expended? So I think the great point of illustrating of Alex Haley's original dedication to roots in the early 1970s, you go with roots and you have roots to next generation. So the great part of the ending part of the original roots, if you notice that the descendants from Kunta Kinte and the forefathers of Alex Haley, they resided on the same plantation. After slavery was over and they received word that, you know, freedom had arrived, they stayed there. So was there really a level of freedom of concept, or was it slavery under another name when you get to instances like sharecropping? After slavery was over, these are the same folks through legislation that were not allowed to read and write and have basic levels of computation. So if I'm at a plantation and I'm being told I'm going to work here for X amount of years until I work off my debt, if I'm struggling to be able to understand this contract,
you have no idea how bad
am I ever
that
getting
is.
Out of the system. So that's why it's appropriate and important to understand that there's a second level. And when you have the removal of the federal troops with the Compromise of 1877, Reconstruction is no more. So that federal level of protection was removed. So then we have things like the Black Codes and a lot of those individuals who had been in charge of state governments coming and taking and writing those state constitutions to now write back in under the discriminatory language. So it's great. We have lots of conversations about the success and failures of Reconstruction, but it's a great distinction to know that after slavery is over, it's not important. Opportunity to celebrate in the South, there was another oppressive system, and that is the sharecropping system that entrapped generations and generations. Doing my own personal family genealogical research, you saw that some of my forefathers in the state of South Carolina were part of the sharecropping system. That is a great distinction that we look at the manumission and the freedom, but we also have to look at the contemporary period that happens directly after the war. And when, for lack of a better way to phrase it, the United States government pulls out of the South, and then what happens? Those generals and those leaders who were part of making sure that slavery was an institution did not go anywhere. In fact, they regained a lot of their power.
Hmm. If you're just joining the show, we're exploring the history of Juneteenth. It's an annual holiday marking the day of in June of 1865 when the abolition of slavery in the U.S. was announced in Texas, as well as the overall emancipation of enslaved African Americans throughout the former Confederate states. My guests are Jarrett Eady. He's director of diversity and inclusion at the Lee School District and board member of the Lee County Black History Society, and Dr. Jeffrey Fortney. He's a history professor here at FGCU. So when did this day become a day for celebration? It seems like probably not immediately.
Actually, we know in 1866.
Okay.
There are accounts.
Pretty immediately.
Pretty close, right?
What it becomes of a, whether it's formal celebration or it's small groups. We have people who talk about, well, they met because they knew that this was the day. There's references to firing off guns. There's references. My favorite thing, you have references to parodies of Confederate songs. They take Bonnie Blue Flag and change the lyrics around to make it about freedom. But 1867, so 1 year later, when the Freedmen's Bureau is in Texas, this is when they saw an opportunity of this day where people are already gathering to make it potentially a political and useful day. So this would be a day where they would say, okay, come have this celebration, and we're also going to show you about voter registration. We're going to talk to you about the new rights that you've gained through here, hopefully talk about education systems that are being built up. So pretty much right away, 1867, we get a formal celebration, and it continues after that year by year.
Real quick, the Freedmen's Bureau. I had a question on the previous page that I skipped. Just real quickly, what was that?
Freedmen's Bureau is created by an act of Congress during the war. The idea is you're going to have enslaved people who have been deprived of all of these rights. So what's it going to take to basically get them on their feet? So you have this organization that's supposed to inform about rights, but also negotiate contracts for contract labor. If there is abuses, be able to step in. It's initially authorized for a year, but then continued for several years over President Johnson's veto. It's very ambitious, but at the same time limited in scope. You have less than 1,000 agents at its highest for the entire South. So one of those great concepts, but you can really debate its efficacy.
Mm-hmm. Do we know were there any whites participating in the early celebrations? Is that known?
There are participating. They're there. They're active to some extent. They're at least witnessing. Some of the early celebrations had parades and floats and speakers. And
so maybe in sort of on the edge of the audience.
Kind
sure.
Of supporters and advocates and allies.
That's what I was thinking might be the case.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely there. But this is still clearly from the beginning. It's an African-American-led right. event. It has African-American speakers throughout. A lot of times it's African-American women who were speaking in places and leading in areas where for the time it would almost have been expected for there to be pushback and there wasn't.
Hmm. Do we know when it made it past the borders of Texas or how did it leave Texas?
Well, I know it was an official holiday around in the early 80s, 1980 or so, when it was designated as a holiday in the state of Texas. And I think to Dr. Fortney's point, another example of the spirit of the Freedmen's Bureau. And there's lots of conversation whether or not Reconstruction was a success or failure. But I think the major thing of African-American communities that we're trying to commemorate this weekend with the Juneteenth celebration was the importance of education. So you had the development of Freedmen's Bureau schools. And schools like Howard University that start to develop around the turn of the century as we're getting close to the early 1900s to provide that level of educational support. So when we think of education and higher post-secondary education, a lot of those early universities or historically black colleges and universities, some of them started off as training ground schools, mm-hmm. not necessarily awarding baccalaureate degrees, but just doing the basic essentials of being able to read and write, and those develop and move forward into the great institutions of higher learning that we have today. So that is something that I consider to be a benefit of the impetus around the Freedmen's Bureau as the concept of getting education.
Oh, absolutely. I would add in, I've read on some of the early 1900 celebrations, there would be floats, and one of it was on the progress of the race. Mm-hmm. And this would be a big push for here are the current schools. Here's the progress that we're making. And a lot of this, it seems vocational at times. Mm-hmm. It seems this is a highlighting part of the community's focus. And that's one thing that historians look at. And you look at freedmen communities, and there are certain things that they share. And one of them is an absolute obsession with a dedication towards education, mm-hmm. trying to access it, trying to spread it. And you see these highlighted within the Juneteenth ceremonies.
So Texas recognized it formally in 1980. That was the first state that did so. Did it then start to become adopted by other states? You know, is that when the modern arc that we're sort of seeing now began?
You know, I think we're still moving toward the climax if we're doing story development. I'm moving opportunities like this to get the word out and spread across communities all across our nation gives the chance to be able to get to that ultimate climax that is a part of our everyday conversation. I know when you have individuals who leave Texas and go to other states and other communities, that's how the message became a part of what communities do to celebrate. So this is a great way to be able to have that out. And that's what we're trying to do, to get that level of education through the 7 years we've done in here. So Clemente Park this Saturday, 1936 Henderson Avenue, from 10 to 2, we'll have educational exhibits and speakers and award presentations to recognize outstanding young people through scholarships and partnerships with the school district. But that's how we spread the word. So we're inviting kids to receive their scholarships and their award recognitions as a part of the Juneteenth celebration. So that's how we move the word and move the needle on public awareness.
How widely is it celebrated across the country these days?
Go ahead.
No, it's all I think that's the beauty
of – outlighting each other.
You're right. It's that historian thing. You know, you're on the same vibe. You just want to jump in there.
Yep.
But the beauty of social media, it gives an opportunity for communities to have – individual, collective ways to celebrate Juneteenth. I know individuals who have, just like the 4th of July, they have their Juneteenth celebrations at home. You have the concerted effort like we do here in Southwest Florida. And I referenced something I saw, an episode of Blackish that's on ABC on primetime television. There was an entire episode with context connected to spreading the awareness about Juneteenth. So, you know, you can hashtag anything. So I'm sure if you go and look on our social media, you'll see a lot of communities celebrating in varying ways, parades, celebrations. But the great part of it is ensuring that there's a community aspect, because the word of freedom coming was the hope and dream of being able to bring community together without regard to being enslaved. And I think that's what the important message is that there's always work to do, and you can't rest on your laurels because when you rest on your laurels and become complacent, we know what things happen from there.
What about some sort of, you know, federal recognition? Is that even on the table anywhere?
Yes, there actually is efforts right now for a federal recognition. There was pushes even going back to – it was hoped when George W. Bush was president that him having these Texas roots that he would be willing to push this through didn't quite hit. Then the next was there was a push for President Obama. And while there's been federal declarations, there hasn't quite been the level of that we were hoping. It's more been a state by state by state, and it is rapidly progressing. So I think that is the next step. I saw just a brief note that even President Trump had made even a recognition of Juneteenth. And so I mean, historians are terrible at predicting the future. We try not to as best we can, but it seems like that's the next step.
You know, Jared, as somebody who grew up here, what's it like for you to be sort of the tip of the spear of bringing this back to the community in some ways? If I'm not overstating that, I think I got that right, kind of.
Well, I would say it's more of the collective level of not necessarily the spear, but if I took a toothpick. It's very hard for me to break a collective bunch of toothpicks. It's easy to break one if it's isolated. So I like to see myself as a part of the community united to edify the history of the local community and tell these levels of stories. So it's been an honor and a privilege of being a fifth generation resident of the Southwest Florida community, but being able to afford myself to a lot of the opportunities that we have here, but then having a chance to change the perception of historical holidays and being able to ensure that children have exposure without regard to race, color, or creed, that all of our kids have exposure to these things because we know we live in a very diverse society. So it's important that we're diverse and also inclusive of our collective celebrations. And I say our collective celebrations because I go out on my personal experience. The beauty of our country is our opportunity to have our diverse stories. And I love those stories. So this is just another part of the American fabric that we need to continue to push forward.
You know, you mentioned earlier about social media and hashtags and things like that. I mean, I know obviously it can be used for ill, but do you think in some ways that, you know, the kids that are growing up now, you know, they don't really think about people as the other because they're far away or the other because they look different because they're all just connected through these devices. Do you think there's like a possible real solid upside to that? I mean, that's sort of my hope anyway.
I think that we can create a global community, but with any level of technology, we have to use it responsibly.
Sure.
Because we know there are also detrimental ways to use that technology. But even with the technology, it's incumbent on us to ensure that the generations that are under us we still let them know to foster the appreciation of diversity and that these devices can connect us, but they can also isolate us so that we can use social media responsibly. But if I want to look up Juneteenth and if I'm in Iowa and I hear it, I have the opportunity to look it up and understand what it is. Just like if I'm in Southwest Florida and I learn about quinceañera, all those great things, I can use my device for a level of spreading the message and living in a truly global society.
Hmm. We are basically out of time. So remind our listeners one more time, the celebration is this Saturday.
Yes, this Saturday.
10 to 2.
And Roberto Clemente Park. It's also the location of the Williams Academy Black History Museum. So we invite all of our listeners to come out and spread the word and enjoy a great day of education, commemoration, and celebration of this holiday so that next year we can say, okay, we've had the best Juneteenth ever. Now we're going to move the needle even further so that it's a part of the conversation here in the Southwest Florida community.
Well, that sounds good to me. Any final thoughts, Dr. Fortney? No?
I think that pretty much summed it up.
We could keep going. Dr. Fortney and I are history guys.
Yeah. We'll have to have you guys back and just talk about other historic things because I've enjoyed our conversation. That is all the time we have for this part of the show. I want to thank my guests. Jared Eady is Director of Diversity and Inclusion at the Lee County School District or the Lee School District and a Lee County Black History Society board member. Jared, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mike.
And Dr. Jeffrey Fortney is an Assistant Professor of History at Florida Gulf Coast University. Dr. Fortney, thanks to you as well.
Oh, thank you.
And we are going to take a short break. When we return, WGCU's John Davis recently sat down with the director of the nursing home resident advocacy nonprofit called Families for Better Care for a closer look at findings from the organization's newly released annual state-by-state ranking and report card on nursing home care across the country. We'll hear that conversation exploring how Florida fared this year and what's behind the overall decline in nursing home inspection scores. I'm Mike Canary. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.